Welcome to The Favorites, the podcast from the Action Network. I am Chad Millman. Listen, it is Tuesday morning. Last night, I watched the Sixers and the Nets play, and I watched the Sixers score 51 points in the third quarter to tie an NBA playoff record. And I thought, well, that's going to be the action for the night. And then the Clippers and the Warriors played, and I can't think of anyone better to come on and discuss all of the NBA action than Worldwide Wob, Rob Perez of the Action Network, who did an epic 24-minute Periscope last night, late night to catch us all up on it. He's going to rehash everything from the evening this morning. Wob, how you doing, buddy?
This is why you can't work and cover the NBA and be on the East Coast. And life was so much easier in Los Angeles. But these games that don't end until 2 a.m., it's 5 a.m. before you're actually getting done doing content or watching Inside the NBA or whatever the hell it is you're doing. But I guess that's what we signed up for. So good morning to you too, Chad.
Listen, I appreciate
waking me up.
I will say that, you know, I was watching that game last night. I knew you were coming on the podcast this morning because we had set this up before the games. And I'm thinking to myself, well, he's probably going to do a Periscope. This guy's not going to bed. I don't think he's going to bed the entire night. And I half thought of, you know what? I'll text him right now and say, don't worry about it. We'll catch you another time. And then I thought, well, if he really doesn't want to do it, he'll just text me and be like, I'm way too tired. I appreciate your professionalism.
If you did that, I would have never spoken to you again because I wrote an article. I did a Periscope. I set an alarm just for this. And if I woke up to a we're not doing this text, we would have had problems.
We would have had words. Would we have had the kind of words that Patrick Beverley is having with Kevin Durant right now? That is insane. Absolutely insane what he is doing to him.
I don't really know what to compare it to, but it's more of just he planted a seed, not just in game two down 30, but he did it in game one too, where he plants the seed of I'm Patrick Beverley and I'm here just to annoy the crap out of you. And it's not even like he doesn't play the misconception here is that Pat Beverley plays dirty. I've never really thought he plays dirty. Sometimes he just plays too hard and creates those situations in which one can interpret that he plays dirty. So, for example, in game one, when Kevin Durant got like an and one call because he did his rip through and kind of falls back, and Patrick Beverley's like impersonating him with a flail, and they're going back and forth, and they exchange technical fouls, then they exchange ejections. And Kevin Durant said he was cool with it after the game. He's like, I kind of like that. We were just trash talking. You know, nothing was taken personally. But when you're up 31, you get a win, you can say that, right? You can say that it wasn't personal. And then Patrick Beverley keeps doing it down 31, and he's doing this thing at the foul line where he's pretending to fall into the paint every time Kevin Durant is taking a free throw. And it's starting to piss him off a little bit. And when Kevin Durant ends the game with almost as many fouls as total shots and more turnovers than total shots, and he's got Patrick Beverley inside of his shirt clapping in his face, maybe it's not a joke anymore. And that's just – it's not a knock against KD as much as it is a credit and a testament to just what Patrick Beverley is, that he's made it this far being this exact player, and he continues to produce and be efficient as the NBA evolves from this 90-style basketball to pace and space and to everything is a foul. This man still continues to this day to be an NBA starter and a good one at that.
He is one of those guys who he's good on every single team and yet never sticks with anybody. Why do you think that is?
I wouldn't look so much into not sticking with teams because in the NBA, the contracts are so short and there's so much turnover for all the players that I don't really see it that way. But he was included as a part of that Chris Paul throwaway. You know, Daryl Morey was like, here's seven players for Chris Paul because Chris Paul is this almighty point god, point guard that we're going to pay $40 million to when he's 35 years old. Here, just take Montrezl Harrell and Patrick Beverley. Montrezl Harrell is probably going to finish second in sixth man of the year, third in most improved player. And Patrick Beverley, by the way, is just like an absolute pit bull hound dog that can guard any. He is a point guard guarding Kevin Durant in the playoffs. They put a point guard on Durant, and he limited him to nine total shots. And that nine number is inflated because it was five going into the final couple minutes there. So when Kevin Durant is jacking threes from 30 feet as they're blowing the 30-point lead with 2 minutes left, listen, the Warriors sort of run their offense. Like, Steph Curry has to come off two off-ball screens, and then he usually comes through some sort of an elevator pick. And Kevin Durant is just launching anytime he gets open because he's had Patrick Beverley inside his shirt all game. The seed was planted, and it actually grew on top of the Warriors last night.
I don't mean this to sound nasty. When I watch Patrick Beverley guard Kevin Durant, and I see him get in his face, it's almost like watching, like, remember that video of Kevin Hart versus Draymond Green in that faux three-point shooting contest at the All-Star game? And, like, Kevin Hart is so much shorter than Draymond Green that when he's trying to, like, get in his face, he can get up to maybe his sternum. That's what it feels like when Patrick Beverley is doing it, except he's actually doing it in a real game and being unbelievably effective.
Oh, yeah, the comparison I made here was, and the movie comparison is from the movie The Mummy. There's that beetle that gets inside the guy's skin, and he, like, starts, like, losing his mind. He runs into the wall and, like, kills himself. I know it's a ridiculous movie, but that really is Patrick Beverley in basketball form. And the thing with me is, similar to what you just alluded to with Kevin Hart, is internet culture as well. So Patrick Beverley is a basketball troll. And what do you do with trolls? You don't respond to them, whether you are correct or you are wrong. You could be the most correct response in the history of the internet, and it does not matter if you are responding to a troll. All a troll cares about is that they got the interaction so they can screenshot it and they can put it as their header in their profile. So this whole time, Patrick Beverley is trolling Kevin Durant like, you're going to respond to me by the end of this. You're going to respond to me by the end of this game. And Kevin Durant sitting there just kind of laughing like, we're up 30. I'm going to stand over here and just let him be annoying. And then all of a sudden 30 becomes 20, becomes 10, becomes 5 to, oh my God, we just lost. And Kevin Durant's trying to respond and bring the team back. You can see just the look on Beverly's face. He knows he has a troll clause hooked into Kevin Durant as much as he wants to smile and say, this is just Pat Bev being Pat Bev, and I respect it. It's a lot different now.
This is what makes this last night's game so amazing, is Patrick Beverley fouled out with 4.5 minutes left in the game. All right? Kevin Durant fouled out maybe a minute or so later. We are 10 minutes into this podcast. Last night, you did a 25-minute Periscope. You were 15 minutes into the Periscope. That's 25 minutes of combined content talking about this game, and we haven't even talked about Lou Williams.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's so many other, like, what happened during that game last night? So you had Lou Williams, who was, put it this way, some people were put on this planet to be an artist. Some people were put on this planet to be a salesman. Some people were put on this planet to be a blacksmith, right? It doesn't matter. Like, we all have a purpose. Lou Williams was put on this planet to get buckets. And I don't know how he continues to do this decades later, not games later, not seasons later, not years later. This man has been doing this for decades, and he's just unguardable. So, like, people are talking about, where's Klay Thompson? Klay Thompson was busy last night trying to guard Lou Williams, which is an impossible task in 2019. How do guys like Jamal Crawford and Lou Williams continue to be this good? Well, the rules have changed a little bit, and they've, like James Harden, they're so good at manipulating contact that they're going to be in this league forever. So this is nothing new. Lou Williams was hitting game winners all year. He ran away with Sixth Man of the Year. He's going to win that award again. And the only reason why we didn't talk about Lou Williams more was because the Los Angeles Lakers and all their drama ate up all the market share in the media in Los Angeles. The Clippers have been doing what they did last night all season. And I realize if they were that good, they wouldn't have been the 8th seed. But they have been overachieving with 2 rookies starting, a third-year guy, and a bunch of no-names that you thought fell off planet Earth and were included in a throwaway trade for Chris Paul. So when you combine all those elements together in this little cauldron, the ingredients that are produced in this waft are a team that feels disrespected and is going to overachieve. You combine the personality of Patrick Beverley, and then you have this guy, Landry Shamet. Okay? I don't know if everyone listening to this knows about Landry Shamet. Landry Shamet was another throwaway piece that the Philadelphia 76ers included in the trade for Tobias Harris. Remember the blockbuster thievery trade of, oh my God, they just got Tobias Harris for what? Landry Shamet was the key piece going back. All Landry Shamet has done is be the best NBA player. I'm talking LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo. They were all second to Landry Shamet after the All-Star break in terms of individual net rating on-off stats. Meaning he was the best player statistically in the NBA going all the way into the final season, the final week of the season. That's an actual fact, that his presence on the court meant that much to the Clippers, and the Clippers were the best second-half team, and it was all because of Shannon's shooting ability. Guess what he did last night? It came on the line. No big deal. You're just playing an Oracle against the best dynasty of all time. Just steps right up and hits the game winner like it's absolutely nothing. So how many players have we talked about at this point? Four or five guys that are completely no-namers that now are going to become household names because the Clippers, Doc Rivers, and more importantly, Lawrence Frank, my executive of the year, have found that recipe that smells pretty damn good.
All right, we've talked about Patrick Beverley. You said we mentioned a few players. Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Landry Shamet. You say Lawrence Frank is executive of the year. On your Periscope last night, you also said Bob Myers could be executive of the year for getting Andrew Bogut to come back from Australia. So let's flip this, because at the end of the day, like, we're talking about a 31-point comeback. We're talking about 3-1. We're talking about a Warriors team that at the end of the day, like you said last night, they're going to win this series in five games. So let's get to the Warriors for a second. If you're a betting man, now is the best price to get the Warriors, probably. But also, why do you say Bob Myers should be executive of the year in the Periscope last night because it got Andrew Bogut to come back from Australia?
Right. So there should be some context to that if you're going to say that it was in the moment exaggeration that he should now be considered because of what happened to DeMarcus Cousins. So from all the things that happened last night, we haven't mentioned yet that the prized possession of free agency, likely, we don't know at the time of filming this, but could very likely have a torn quadricep and be out for the playoffs. At the very least, Steve Kerr said it's going to, quote, be a while, and it is a, quote, significant injury. So Bob Myers just decides, I believe in early March, maybe it was late February, whenever it was, to call up Andrew Bogut, the former center for the Warriors, who was the MVP down for the Sydney Kings in Australia, decides to call him up and say, hey, do you want to come back up here for the remainder of the season and play for the Warriors? And that ended up being a really, really important decision because without him, the Warriors would simply just have Kevon Looney. Now, Kevon Looney has been perfect, almost perfect, as perfect as Kevon Looney can be for this Warriors team. You want to talk about how important players are when they're on the court versus they're off. Looney makes the Warriors a plus 10.1 net rating, and when he's off the court, it goes all the way down into like 4-8, I believe. So that means his presence is worth almost 5.5 points to the Golden State Warriors. It's the complete opposite for Boogie. So on paper, the Warriors are not going to miss Boogie that much. And part of that reason is because DeMarcus Cousins is a ball stopper. And when he's out there with Kevin Durant, who's also a ball stopper, when you play in the Warriors offense, the ball doesn't stop. So it really hasn't been a basketball fit in terms of like on paper stuff. But the eye test will tell you that DeMarcus Cousins is an all-star for a reason. And he looked pretty dang good this year. So they're going to miss him for depth purposes. But when it comes to actual like gameplay and you look back on the advanced analytics, DeMarcus Cousins will not be as important as losing like a Steph Curry or a Klay Thompson or Draymond Green. So my statement about Bob Myers was that was probably the most important phone call he's made all year, even more so than DeMarcus Cousins, because Bogut, like Looney, does not need the ball. He's in there for one reason, to protect the paint, clean the glass, do all of those important things that Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant are not willing to do. You don't need a fifth player who is so good at offense that he needs the ball. There's only one of it on the court. So unless you're willing to adapt to and embrace this Warrior style of play, DeMarcus Cousins is not a great long-term fit for this team. And having Bogut and Looney as options is going to make life a little bit easier for those guys who have been around the Clays, the Hamptons Five. Their lives are going to be a little bit easier.
If you're, did you watch, I felt like, 60 Minutes on Sunday had a Game of Thrones story, which I know you like, and a story about the Warriors. Did you happen to see the story by John Wertheim on 60 Minutes about the Warriors on Sunday night?
Enough to continue to have this conversation.
So, which is really all you need in a podcast. That was when they were interviewing all five of those guys. They were interviewing Iguodala, Sean Livingston, Clay, Durant, and Steph. That was some weird body language in that interview, especially from Kevin Durant. What did you think?
Well, remember 60 Minutes, they film their stories probably 5 to 6 months before they actually go to air, right? A majority of these. Now, I don't know when the exact date that this was filmed, but based on Steph Curry's haircut and his goatee, that sure looked like the end of November. And at the beginning of November, we know what happened. Back against the Clippers in that Staples, that same Staples Center, Draymond Green and Kevin Durant had their World War III on the bench. And that's when, like, 2 weeks of, oh my God, this might be actually happening, was happening there for a little bit. So that the timing of that, they may not have been in love with each other. And to be honest, they still probably don't love each other to this day. But they are so good that it is in their best business interest. You know what they look like when they're sitting there talking in that interview? They know that, you know what, we're probably going to break up and we don't like each other, but it is in our best business interest to just come together for this playoff run. Let's win 4 titles in 5 years, and we'll worry about kumbaya after this. So that's the vibe that has always surrounded this team throughout the year. And to be honest, it's the same vibe that surrounded the Jordan's Bulls for almost a decade. All of these dynasties, these guys have egos. They think they're the best players. They want to get paid. They want the recognition. It's only natural, right? We're all human, but they do look like they're at the end of that. Okay, let's one more is fine, and then we're going to move on here.
God, that is some Zapruder film breakdown right there, because that could also be why, if we want to extend the conspiracy a little bit further, that could be why Draymond wasn't in the interview.
That's 100%. Would be my theory. I wish I could prove that if I'm putting, I don't have any tinfoil in this near me around this chair, but the reason why Draymond was not included was because Warriors PR likely held him out, as they did many times during that run. Remember, there was a stretch there, not even during the Draymond versus KD thing in November, when there was the second, like, what is going on here with Kevin Durant going to New York or something, that KD didn't talk to the media for 8 days, and he was, like, running out of practice through the back door, avoiding PR and everything. So this is, guess what happened last night? Draymond and KD left before the media got into the locker room. They snuck out the back door, the Bruce Wayne door. So this is just, like, another notch on the belt for these guys. And the fact that Draymond Green was not there was certainly not by accident.
KD is becoming such an enigma, because he's a guy who he should be having more fun playing basketball than anybody. He is built for basketball better than anybody could possibly be built. He is, except for by Patrick Beverley, essentially unguardable. He can do whatever he wants on the court at any time. He's playing on a team that could be amongst the greatest, most legendary athletic teams that has ever talked about. And he looks miserable every single time. Even during that 60 Minutes piece when he was practicing, he looked miserable. How do you reconcile that?
I think the only person who can truly answer that is Kevin Durant. I'm sure there's some things going on that nobody knows about. And I'm going to continue to reiterate that they're humans too. Right. So despite his amazing superior talent to play basketball, that may not be enough for him. Does he love playing basketball? Does he not love playing basketball? I wish I could answer those questions for him. But to your point, at this current moment, I would probably say it's real close between him, Giannis, and LeBron. But you could argue that he is the best basketball player on planet Earth. And you'd figure if you're the best basketball player on planet Earth, life is pretty good, right? But something is clearly not fulfilled for him, that you can win 2 straight finals MVPs. There's a very high chance you're going to win 3 straight finals MVPs and go into a conversation that only Bill Russell can say that he did, right? You went to Golden State to get your trophies and your rings. Maybe you did it to get the approval of everyone that says you were the next Patrick Ewing. You were the best player that never finished with a championship. Well, now I don't have everyone thinks I kind of bought my way into this versus earned it. And now I wish I could answer these, but these are all common themes that may just have stacked up in his brain throughout time, that the only way he's going to be happy is if X, Y, and Z happens. And that's why so many people are, like, looking to see him come to New York, because if he were to win a championship in New York, You know, it's the same thing as LeBron going back to Cleveland. We forgot that LeBron was the biggest villain on planet Earth for almost 5 years. Kevin Durant is the biggest sports villain in the United States because of what his decision to go to Golden State. If he came to New York, he wouldn't build him a statue if he won a championship. No statue outside the Garden. He would get his own tower. He would get his own skyscraper. They would rename the Canyon of Heroes after him. So if he's looking for narratives now, in addition to actual accomplishments and achievements, maybe that's the next step for him. And your reconcile question, that's how maybe he's going to reconcile it before his career is done.
All right, I got one more question for you. Later on the podcast, we got Mike Leboff, hockey editor, writer, Islander fan extraordinaire, the creator of Francesicon, by the way, and Action Network, you know, do it all master. He's going to come on later and we're going to talk about the Stanley Cup. But I have one more question for you before I let you go. Your all foxhole team as of right now, who is your all foxhole team?
Patrick Beverly, Kemba Walker, Montrezl Harrell. I think it's going to create some problems, but I do want Chris Paul in there just because he's so smart and in the way he thinks ahead. My fifth spot, wish I could give you a fifth spot off the top of my head. Those four guys are in my foxhole, though. I can tell you that much.
Who do you think could eat the most thumbtacks and wash them down with the most nails?
Well, I mean, I made the joke last night. I think the answer is Patrick Beverly. He's been doing that throughout his career. That when everyone's over there enjoying themselves, Patrick Beverly is, it's like he's the Mankind. For anyone out there that watched WWE Attitude Era, he is the Mankind of NBA basketball, that you just can't kill him. He just keeps coming back, and anything you do to him just seemingly makes him stronger.
Listen, Wob, you've had a nice run of content the past 12 hours. I want you to go take a nap.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Thank you, brother. I'll talk to you later. Let's take a break from the podcast to talk about our favorite advertiser of erectile dysfunction pills. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health, whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse. Could there be something worse? Guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. I've broken my back. I've had my appendix taken out. You know what I do? I stay at work. That's what I do. I always stay at work. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where you can chat with a licensed U.S. physician who can treat ED and, if safe and appropriate, ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. I don't know why it has to be an awkward face-to-face conversation. My kids listen to the podcast every once in a while. They've heard the Roman ads, and they think it's fantastic that we're talking about this. I'm just going to say that out loud. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/favorites, complete an online visit, chat with a doctor, and if the doctor decides it would be safe and appropriate, they'll ship genuine medication right to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle. But with Roman, it's really simple. So take care of it. For a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/favorites. That's GetRoman.com/favorites for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/favorites. As my friend Blackjack would say, get Roman. Get hard. Let's get back to the podcast. Kids, I hope you enjoyed that one. All right, next up on the podcast, from the Action Network, one of my favorites. I can't believe he hasn't been fired yet, but Mr. Michael Leboff covers hockey, covers baseball.
Yeah.
Covers everything, really. But mostly, I think you're probably known at the Action Network for the things you don't do at the Action Network, like your podcast, Islanders Anxiety.
Yeah, that's right.
And being the creator of Francesicon.
Mm-hmm.
So before we even get into the Islanders, which is why you're here, we're going to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs. And the Islanders, it's Tuesday morning. Like I said, the Islanders have a chance to sweep the series tonight. You are wearing your Islanders hat. You're wearing your Islanders sweater. You're wearing your Islanders t-shirt. You have been thinking about all the things you can do to rub it in John Tavares's face when the Islanders advance to the second round of the playoffs. You had a conversation this morning. Tell me about your conversation this morning coming in on the LIRR with the train conductor.
Yeah, I was just walking away from a screaming baby, walking downstream, as we like to call it, towards the back of the train, and I got stopped because I'm wearing an Islanders hat, and he wanted to check my ticket. He thought I had just got on, and I said, no, you know, I was just getting away from that maniac baby over there, and he's like, yeah, plus you got an Islanders hat on, you're good. And then we just started talking about the game for, you know, 20 minutes while an oversized truck hit a tunnel, so we had to slow down in Forest Hills. There's always something new on the Long Island Railroad. And so that slowed the Iron Horse down a little bit, and we got to talking, and you know, yeah, the Islanders are up 3-0 on the Penguins right now, and the credo from Barry Trotz, our fearless leader, has been the fourth game is the hardest to win. And as excited and surreal as this whole thing has been, we kept reminding each other not to count our chickens before they hatch, because you know, if there's a team that can blow a 3-0 lead and just stomp your heart in front of your face, it's the New York Islanders. And so we're not looking past this game. We're not counting anything as done and dusted. So the conversation was literally, oh, I'm so excited. You know, this is a dream, but we got to win the fourth game. And then I would reply, you know, the fourth game is the hardest game to win. And he said, yeah, this team is really tough. Like, if there's a team that can come back from a 3-0 lead, it's Sidney Crosby and the Penguins. So we made sure to kind of pump our brakes a little bit.
Both literally and metaphorically.
Yes, exactly. There were a lot of brakes being pumped on the train this morning.
Here's what I love about Leboff is you go all in on your passions. The Islanders, when you decided things weren't going well in Rockville Center, what did you do?
I ran for mayor.
How old were you?
20.
And what happened?
I lost.
Why did you lose?
I was just a political machine that I was trying to tear down. It was too tough. The incumbent mayor... he's a good guy. His dad was mayor for like 30 years in my town. Part of the reason I was running for mayor was just because the Islanders were in a very precarious position, and I didn't know how to get into a position of power and try to like save them. And this was one avenue. Not that that was the only reason. Obviously, I'm an idealistic guy. Like I would love to be in a position to make the world a little bit better place, make tiny changes to Earth, if you will. And
it's all any of us can do.
Yeah, exactly. And I lost. This guy, Fran Murray, is doing a pretty decent job. And I mean, every time I see him, which has probably been like 6 or 7 times since then, it's, you know, a little cold. And I've never had a political rival before, and now I do.
Does he know it's cold when you see him, or is it just from you?
I don't know, actually. I saw him once at a bar. We ended up relieving ourselves at adjacent urinals.
Really?
Yeah. And that's when I noticed it was cold.
What? He wouldn't look at you? Is that what happened?
Well, I said hello, and he didn't say back. Usually you say hello back or how are you, and he didn't do that. It was a big drinking day on Long Island. Is drinking days. I think we do drinking days, and I think we curse better than anybody. Like, we don't waste curse words on anything. So it was Irish day on Long Island in Rockville Center, and it was late. We both had our drinking legs under us and made it till the sun came down, which is an accomplishment in itself. And I think I said hello, and then he didn't say it back. But, you know, maybe he was just a little fatigued from the drinking.
Wait, there's an Irish day in Long Island that is different than St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah, there's so many Irish days, actually. There's like, they just like throw them on the calendar just to like, I think, bring in an influx of people from all over. Rockville Center, where I grew up, is known for having this. A lot of towns claim this. We claim it too. Most bars per capita in the United States, and so a lot of people come from all over Long Island. The week after St. Patrick's Day is our Irish Day.
So Fran Murray is your political rival.
Yeah, well, he's one of them. I'm several, I think, but most of them just don't know it.
They don't. But you're thinking about him. You're going after him.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The other thing that you started before we even get to the playoffs is Francesca.
Yes.
Mike Francesa, there was a great story about this. This is why I hired you, is because we were talking, and you're like, I started FrancesaCon, and then you sent me the story that was in Grantland about you starting FrancesaCon. I feel like you starting FrancesaCon and Francesa on WFAN these are the most Long Island things ever.
Yeah.
Explain how you started this.
Well, it wasn't just me. It was me and my buddy Ron, who's actually from Clifton, New Jersey. But he's a huge Francesa guy, too. And, yeah, one I was used to working in this financial job, which, like, I to this day don't know how I ended up there. It didn't last long. And one day I was driving home from work, and I was just, like, real pissed off because I hated my job. I hated my boss. And I was stuck in traffic on the Merritt Parkway, which you know very well.
Know very well.
And I was listening to Mike, and I was just cracking up because he was just going off on someone. And I called my buddy. I was like, we need to start a bar crawl for Mike Francesa and just have people dress up like Mike, you know, like SantaCon. And we both kind of just shot the idea around. And we were working, you know, both freelancing for a guy who ran a sports culture website out in the West Coast, and he didn't really know, you know, much about the Francesa phenomenon. He's like, yeah, go for it. So we did, and the next thing you know, it like kind of just went pretty much like sports viral, I guess would be the best way to put it. And he called me. He's like, we're gonna get sued by Mike Francesa. I can't be attached to this. And we're like, all right, like, but we're gonna still do it. And we did. It was it was the Saturday before the Super Bowl in New York. It was a bar crawl. Didn't really get past one bar, but I mean, it was a great time.
Where did you start and finish?
It was a bar called The Saloon. I don't think it's there. It's up on the Upper East Side, or it was. I think it closed. But we had special guests there. We had Jack Youngblood, who is an NFL Hall of Famer, showed up.
Played on a broken leg in the Super Bowl.
No idea how he got there, but he was there. Jeff Cumberland, who we paid $1,000 to show up because we had raised money through like ticket sales. Not ticket sales that year, but just selling t-shirts online. So we had paid Jeff Cumberland a show-up fee. He was a terrible tight end for the Jets. Like, just, I mean, I don't know if many Jets fans would know who he is, but he showed up, paid him, you know, grand. We like, me and my friends call it a Cumberland now anytime someone talks about $1,000. And Amir Khan, who's actually boxing Terrence Crawford at Saturday at the Garden, showed up. His people call me the day before Francesa Khan. Hey, Amir is going to be in town for the Super Bowl. He wants to go to a Super Bowl party. Yours really stuck out. I was like, Amir Khan, the British boxer? And he's like, yeah. I was like, all right. Like, he's more than welcome to show up. He's going to have no idea what's going on. So he just, like, walked through the crowd and walked out. And, you know, that boxing already is a niche sport. Mike Francesa Khan was a very niche thing. One person noticed, called in to Mike the next day, and was like, or his first Super Bowl show on Sunday. And was like, Mike, did you know Amir Khan was at Francesa Khan? And he thought he meant the Jacksonville Jaguars owner, whose last name is also Khan. He's like, the Jacksonville Jaguars owner was at Francesa Khan? And he's like, yeah. So Mike thought that the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars was at Francesa Khan. He might to this day, but yeah. And then Mike and I have become, you know, basically best friends since then. I actually was texting him on the train.
Yeah, you text him a lot. Every day you tell me when you're texting Francesa.
Yeah, it's a flex.
You flex very well.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the NHL playoffs.
Let's do it.
Last night you were on the Predators.
Yes.
They won. Mm-hmm. You were on the money line. You have the only reason anyone in the office is betting hockey is because you're betting hockey. So, and Ken Barkley, Lockie Lockerson, mm-hmm. who has been writing like amazing stuff and putting out systems that anyone can follow. Like, he's putting out a spreadsheet and then people can fill in their own systems on his spreadsheet, essentially. If they go to the Action Network, actionnetwork.com, download the free app. What are you thinking about when you're betting hockey right now?
Yeah, the NHL playoffs are just a really, really good opportunity to learn a lot about betting because it's a very controlled environment, a very controlled betting environment, right? The same two teams are playing each other especially between game one and game two. There's very little change, right? The teams are on the same rest. They're playing in the same venue. There's an injury or whatever, but most of the time it's the same roster playing each other. So the market theoretically should be set before game one. So the best example is last year the Penguins played the Flyers. They won game one 7-0. They were like -180. Then for game two, they were like -230. So what's that telling you? It's like the market's already been set at -180. So you're getting, you know, somewhere between 30 to 50 cents of value on the Flyers the next game because you already know what the line should be. They already told you what the line should be. And it doesn't even matter that the Flyers did win game two, but that doesn't even matter. What matters is you were able to recognize that situation and then take advantage of it. And we saw that with the Blue Jackets and Lightning a little bit. Lightning lost game one, which they were already overpriced. Like, people are underestimating the Blue Jackets. They're a good team. Like, sure, they were the eight seed, and they're playing a generational team. But the Blue Jackets are good, and they got better at the deadline, and they're coming in to the playoffs hot, which has some correlation to doing well in the playoffs. And so people are already underestimating them. They win game one. Then people just can't fathom the fact that this amazing Lightning team would go down 2-0 at home. So the line moved in their direction for game two, too. And what are you going to do there? You're not going to take a bad number when the market's already been set. You're going to take a good number on top of what it was already a good number. And the Blue Jackets won. So, like, there's a very easy kind of, like, surface-level way to get in. And I always try to tell, like, I was talking to Scott Miller, like, I think last year for the playoffs.
Scott Miller, executive editor of the Action Network.
Right. I was like, Scott, you know, I'm not a big hockey fan at all. I you know, kind of explained my strategy for that game with the Penguins and Flyers, and that drew him in. And it takes one hockey bet to get into hockey, I think, especially in the playoffs. Like, it's a different animal. Once you do it, like, the game is just a roller coaster. It's just chaos, just absolute chaos in a very small area. So once you do that, you'll get into it. And there's so much good public facing data in hockey too. So you can just keep learning and learning, and it's already a soft market because not as many people bet it. So your best, I think, if you're going to bet one of the four major sports and you're looking to actually succeed and not just betting to, you know, because you're watching the Dolphins and the Bears on Sunday, it's got to be hockey.
This all makes perfectly good sense, except for the fact that you still end up betting on bad teams.
Yeah, all the time. I think, I mean, I had another good season betting hockey, and I was well under 500 because it's just betting bad underdogs.
So that's what you really do, is you end up betting the money line on the underdogs mm-hmm. every single time. When do you bet favorites in the NHL, in the playoffs especially?
Rarely. I would say, like, probably the most expensive team I bet this year was, like, minus 140. It's such a volatile sport already. It's very low event scoring, too. So one goal is very important, and think about how many goals go in off someone's shin pad, and that changes the game completely. You know, so you take advantage of that volatility by not, you know, laying crazy prices. Sure, there sometimes is value on favorites in hockey, but I tend to, and maybe this is, you know, an area I've got to improve on, is I tend to just always lean towards the underdog because I don't think we account for the randomness of the sport enough.
So what do you do about the Islanders? The Islanders are up 3-0. What's the price on the Islanders tonight?
They're like plus 150. They've been underpriced. This is probably the closest to the appropriate price we've seen in the series.
And so they're plus 150 against the Pens tonight. Penguins down 3-0. What do you do in that game?
Right now, I don't really think I'm going to bet it. I have an Islanders series bet. I have an Islanders Stanley Cup future.
So do I, by the way.
Yeah, I know. We all do.
Yeah. I think who bought those for everybody?
Evan Abrams.
Evan Abrams, one of our
indispensable.
Yeah, one of our do it all guys at the Action Network, and you see him on television all the time too. For I'll take that bet. He went out to Vegas. He bought everybody an Islanders futures ticket. I forgot what the price was at.
30-1.
30-1. So you have an Islanders futures bet. You have an Islanders series bet. Take the Islanders out of it, then handicap the rest of the NHL playoffs for me.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of scary teams. Like, I think the Knights are probably the best bet in the West if you're looking to. I mean, the number's pretty much gone at this point for any team, but they're good. Like, and I think they've kind of flown under the radar a little bit because of all the hoopla of their season last year. They're good. They're playing. The Sharks are also good, but the Sharks have a terrible goalie. Like, goaltending also is a really, really probably the hardest position to project in all sports, I think. Is goaltending in the NHL. Like, guys just come out of nowhere to have great seasons. Guys fall off a cliff all the time. Like, it's just impossible to be able to project goaltending. And there are a lot of bad goalies in the West. Like, Mike Smith on the Flames is a serious Achilles heel. Martin Jones for the Sharks, not good. So the Knights are not only a good team, but they have a reliable goaltender in Marc-Andre Fleury, which should put them in a decent position. The Blues, who had a horrible start to the regular season, have kind of put things together around the midway mark, and after they lost to the Islanders, actually, they even cite that game, that was their turnaround point of the season. But their goaltender is a rookie, Jordan Binnington, who's come out of nowhere, kind of taking the lead by storm. So I've not really waded into the Blues that much just because I can't figure this guy out. So rather, I'm just been passing on it. But I mean, if you're really just like looking for a team that maybe has like a shred of value left, it's probably the Knights in the West.
So that would be your team in the West.
That would be my pick.
Picking the West.
I'm rooting for the Avalanche because they're the worst team, and I'm expecting the Islanders to get the Stanley Cup.
Right, so of course. I mean, you want the Islanders to match it, have the best opportunity.
Correct.
If the Islanders don't make it from their conference, who makes it?
Likely, I'm thinking the Bruins are probably. Well, it should be the Lightning, but they're doing.
They're in trouble.
Yes, a lot of trouble. I think whoever comes out of that. It'll be the Bruins, Maple Leafs, or Blue Jackets, assuming they can hold on to this three-game lead. I think whoever comes out of that will play the Islanders in the Eastern Conference Final. So we could be looking at a Tavares situation here.
Oh, my God. If the Islanders play the Maple Leafs and John Tavares is at the focal point of that playoff series, how are you going to handle it?
Not well.
What are you going to do? How are you going to manage that? Are you going to take the week off? Like, are you going to just sit in bed all day? What are you going to do?
I try not to think about it. it's making me nervous right now. I've already, been texting my friends. Like, this is – the Blue Jackets have kind of been, screwing with my mind a little bit just because, I expected the Leafs not to be able to get out of that gauntlet. The Bruins are very good. Obviously, the Lightning are the best team in the league. So I was like, all right, like, they should be taken care of by the time the Islanders are in the Eastern Conference Final. And now have some more uncertainty. And I don't know. I know like a couple of my loved ones, like my mother was very worried about that. She didn't really understand the playoff format, but she's like, well, how likely is it? And I said, it wasn't very likely, 5 days ago, but now it's increasingly likely or getting more likely by the day. And she's very concerned, not just for me, but for like my relationships and, my job and, what would happen to me if and this is not just me. I mean, Islander fans are all like this. Like, we have been treated so poorly, not just by other teams, but like by the media and by local politicians on Long Island. Like, it's just an absolute disaster the way we've been treated. And so getting this opportunity has been, that's why, we don't take anything for granted really as a fan base, just because we can't take, like, for my greater part of my life, when I would not go into bed, I wouldn't know if the Islanders would be there in the morning just because they almost moved so many times. So this isn't just me. Like, this is all Islander fans are kind of have this, feeling inside them. And I'm worried for all of us, not just me.
Listen, I want you to tell your mom you have nothing to worry about in your job. I cannot vouch for your impending marriage, but I can promise you that you are always going to have a job. Unless you keep losing hockey bets, in which case we're going to fire you.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, I don't understand why you and PK are always on my back about this.
Patrick Keane, CEO of the Action Network.
I don't know if you don't follow me in the app or whatever, but usually we're on the winning side in hockey.
I think you're on the winning side of life, Mike Leboff.
I hope so.
Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Anytime.
Let's go back to work.
Yeah.
All right, this has been The Favorites from the Action Network. Download us on Apple Podcasts. Go to radio.com/The Action Network or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, thank you very much.